thing going on here, and it ran over a little bit. So I figured that was a good cause, you know. We have a little problem in that the invocation speaker isn't here yet. I can't blame her. Oh, she is here. Oh, beautiful. Would you like to... Beautiful. Would you like to come up?
Whoa, I can't see over these things. Sorry about that, I had my mouth full. Let's stand and be in a spirit of prayer together. Almighty God, you have created us and given us the life that we have, and for that we give you thanks. And in a sense, for many of us, you have given us new life as well, and for that we give you thanks. We thank you for this time that we can come together and share in fellowship and food. And we ask that during this time, you will nourish us, both in body and in spirit. We pray for those who are here, for the courage and the wisdom that you bestow upon us one day at a time. And we pray for those who are not here, who somehow yet haven't had their eyes opened, who may be afflicted with disease and addiction, and may not yet realize it or admit it. For them we offer to you. Lord, surround us with your presence. Fill us with your spirit. And thank you for the life that you give. Amen. Thank you, Anne. The city of Vancouver is really happy to have us here, and the mayor pro tem, Jim Justin, would like to say a few words.
Thank you, Nancy. When you guys walk by the end of the table up here, be careful because your shoes are under the table. I'm here to be merciful, and that means being short. All I'm going to do is say hello and leave quickly so you can get back to your food. First of all, I would like to welcome you, though, to the city of Vancouver. We're very, very proud of our city. I know that there's many of you here that live in Vancouver and in the surrounding area, but there's also some of you who are from far away. And so to you who are visiting us from afar, welcome to Vancouver. We'd like you to enjoy our city while you're here, see what you can of it, enjoy the sights, and have a good time. I hope that you have a good meeting and a good conference. I'm kind of in a, I'm standing in for the mayor, Mayor Jim Gallagher. So on the program it says Mayor Jim. Well, you're all right in the Jim part, but it's Justin instead of Gallagher. He had another commitment tonight. In fact, we've been kind of sharing some of these duties of late. And as I'm an aspiring slip-tongued politician, I get to make some of the greetings and such. I would like to say one thing, or just a couple things very quickly. As I was on the way down tonight, I tried to review things, a few things in my mind and what I could offer to you folks. We're going through a process in the city right now that's called budgeting, and as we budget our city for next year, we look at some of the programs and the services that are important to us and the ones that we think are important but we might not be able to afford. Some of the programs, unfortunately, that get a lower priority rating are the some of the social service programs and things of that nature. And your street paving and your police and fire, of course, very important. They kind of get the first priority. Well, the social service programs, while they may not always be high on our priority list, are really high in our minds of some of the things that need doing in a community. I think you folks probably are well aware of what the social service programs can do. You're involved in one right now. I'd like to encourage you to remember that these programs are vital to whatever community you're a part of. And if you're a part of this community, I ask for you to help us in our programs in whatever way you can. If you're a part of a community of another community, go back to your community and see what you can do to offer your services for the programs there. I get a real warm feeling when I come into a crowd such as this. It's a new crowd, it's a different crowd, and just in a few minutes that I was here and talking to some of you folks, I think that it's kind of a funny thing, but it kind of helps build myself in some manner or form. So I find it a real pleasure to participate in the greeting tonight. I do welcome you to the City of Vancouver. Hope you have a very, very good conference. Thank you for coming.
Thank you, Mr. Justin. He should have seen me a few years ago. It wasn't just my shoes that were off. This meeting, I just got a note, this meeting is being taped. Anyone who would like to see it taped, see Jack or Vern right after the meeting, and they're right down here. These guys do a fantastic job of taping. I've been buying their tapes for over a year now, and I've never ran into a clinker. They really do a good job. I think now I'm going to let you go ahead and finish dinner, and I'll be back as soon as you're done eating. Drawing. That drawing is going to be to pay you back the cost of the early bird ticket. And there they all are. It's ticket number 026, and it belongs to Phyllis A. from Vancouver, Washington. She's working? Is somebody honest enough they can get this money to Phyllis when she gets off of work? $15.50. You people have come from a long way, some of you. And what we'd like to do now is count down by the towns that you people live in. So I'm going to read your town. And we'd love it if you just stand up and say a little word about your town. Let's hear you scream, okay? You guys ready for that? Aloha, Oregon. Auburn, Washington. Yay! Baker, Oregon. Yay! This town must only have about 30 people in it. It's Banks, Oregon. Battleground, Washington. Yay! Oh, and I know we have some people from here. Bellevue, Washington. Bellingham, Washington. By the way, we have a gift to the people who have come the farthest for this convention. Bend, Oregon. Boring, Oregon. Now I gotta work really hard to say this right. It's Bothell, Washington. Bremerton? Brush Prairie. Brush. Burton, Washington. Camas, Washington. Clackamas, Oregon. Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. Hey! Coos Bay. Coquitlam, B.C.
Corvallis, Oregon. Oh, I know there's some people from here. Eugene, Oregon. There's college types. Everett, Washington. I've never heard of this one before. Forks, Washington. I said it right. Gladstone, Oregon. Oh, here's a good one. Grant Pass. That's three of them. Gresham. Hayward, California. Hugoton, Kansas. Junction City, Oregon. Kansas City, Missouri. All right, yeah. Kent, Washington. Kenwood, California. Lake Oswego. Livermore, California. Longview, Wash. Linden, Washington. Monroe. Marinwood, California. Back by the post. Mill Valley, California. Monroe, Washington. Mount Lake Terrace, Washington. New Westminster, B.C. New Burnaby, B.C. Oh, there's some people here from North Vancouver, B.C. Novato, California. Oak Harbor, Washington. I love this one. Olympia, Washington. Omak, Washington. Oregon City. Payette, Idaho. Clear in the back. Pleasanton, California. Fort Orchard. Fort Moody, B.C. Okay, you turkey. Portland. Those are good people. Redwood City. Clear to back. Richfield. Washington. Sacramento, California. St. Helens. Oregon. Yay! Salem, Oregon. San Anselmo, California. San Francisco. Yay!
for my kind of people. San Mateo. San Rafael. Santa Rosa. Sausalito. One of the most expensive drunks I ever went on was in Sausalito in San Francisco. I spent $500 in 3 days. Seaside. Cheap? Oh, one of the bedroom communities of Portland is Seattle. Sheila Wash. Sheila? Sheila. Springfield, Oregon. Spokane. Oh, there's a Springfield back there. Now Spokane. Oh, I forgot one right off the bat in the A's. Alexandria, Virginia. That's our guest speaker tonight. He's come all the way from the East Coast to share his message with us. Tigard, Oregon. Tillamook, Oregon. Yakult, Washington. Well, I can hardly see you back there, but I can hear you. Off Vancouver, BC. All right. Another suburb that we're thinking about annexing into Portland, Vancouver, Washington. Nice to see all you guys could make it out here tonight. Victoria, BC. All right. Oh, where I graduated from high school, West Lynn, Oregon. White Rock, BC. Yakima, Washington. If I missed any of your towns, stand up and scream them out.
Yay!
Love it.
Fairbon.
Where? Belmont, California. Okay, Crooked River Ranch. Stevenson, Washington. Rushport down on the Oregon coast. Was there one over here? Well, Milwaukee or Oregon? You guys are going to have to help me. My geography is really bad. Does the Hugoton, Kansas win, or does the Kansas City, Missouri? Kansas City? Oh, we got something special for him. The Kansas City wins, and we have a gift if, I believe it's two ladies. No, we don't have a gift if two ladies. You guys won't believe the entertainment tonight. No, I'm sorry. The two ladies were from the other one. We had this really nice. Don't get greedy. We had this really nice gift, and it says, "There are no strangers here, only friends we haven't met."
Oh, bless your heart. Thank you.
I had the pleasure of being in Bellevue and listening to Linda S., who had made up a song that she shared with us about her experience in AA. And I'm wondering if we can get her up here again tonight.
My name is Linda, and I'm an alcoholic. I really like the theme of this experience. Sounds are pretty important to me, and I put together some sounds. Well, we put together some sounds. And so, all you people make my life so easy, that it wasn't always like that. There I go again, using that word easy. And then I say, well, better something else being easy than me. But some of you weren't at the earlier meeting. I'll just go ahead and sing you this song. I never was no prostitute. I never did it for the loot. But if you buy me scotch and water tall, you'd be buying conversation and a drunken ball. I never was no two-bit whore. I never had no Johns a-knockin' on my door. But if you bought me a gallon of gold Chablis wine, you'd be buying a way to stagger into that bed of mine. I never was an infomaniac. You had to do some qualifying to get in my rack. But if you hung around the tavern and bought all my beer, before the night was over, I would call you dear. I never was no scheming bitch. Never took no sugar daddy for to get me rich. But if I could con another bottle out of you, I figured I was winning and you were the fool. And now my drinking and my drugging days are through. I don't have to sleep around with people who do. And when I wake up in the morning instead of coming to, I don't have to ask, who are you?
I used to be
thank you. I'm going to do one for you tomorrow. So you come to the breakfast.
Okay. Last night at the dance, someone gave me a little medal that they found. It says Portland, Oregon. It has a number of 223. I won't give all the numbers. It's an easy does it a day at a time. If anybody finds that this is something of yours and you lost it, why, come talk to me. I would like it if Kelly B. from Everett and Murray from Surrey would come up here and share some announcements with us.
My name is Murray, and I'm an alcoholic. Like I say, just a few months ago that I was in the hot seat like John is tonight, chairman of a conference, and I kind of know what he's going through, but it's all right. Like the song says, this too shall pass. And this is a little thing I'd like to share with you that I noticed the other day. And when I was looking at the application form for this conference, which I didn't send in, I looked at it and it said province or state. Very rare thing. You never see this on an application form. And all of a sudden I said to myself, hey, they really want us to come. They want the Canadians to come. And I like to say this for myself, and I hope the rest of the Canadians here feel the same way. Gee, I'm sure glad we came here. It's really been beautiful. Our Lower Mainland Young People's Committee is split into two parts. We have a steering committee and we have a roundup committee. So I've been kicked upstairs, and this year I'm chairman of the steering committee. And the reason I'm saying what I'm going to say is that I feel that looking at the roundup portion of our committee, the committee that I deal with is the service portion. Looking at it, I feel I'm looking at it from the outside, and I can see a really beautiful committee that we have there. And the work that they've already done in putting on dances this year has been beautiful. And if it keeps on, we're going to have one hell of a roundup. It's really going to be beautiful. We already, the roundup committee has already gotten to the point they have a date and they have a place. It'll be the 6th Annual Lower Mainland Young People's Roundup, April 14th, 15th, and 16th in 1978, via the Sheraton Plaza 500 Hotel, 12th Avenue and Canby Street in Vancouver, B.C. And we may even have free coffee, you know. And we love you, you know. And any one of you that can turn up, that'll, you know, just help our sobriety a little more. We'd like to see you. We'd like to hear you. We'd like you to be there. Thanks very much.
I'm Kelly, and I'm an alcoholic. This has been a beautiful roundup.
I'm sorry.
I'm not a very good public speaker. But,
how far away do you have to be?
Fine.
Okay. Well, we're having a roundup in Everett conference. It's our first one, and we're really trying to do the best we can to get everything going right, and it's kind of hard the first one, but I'll read a little bit about it here. It's Everett Young People's Committee presents the conference, and the theme is You've Got a Friend. And it's November 4th, 5th, and 6th, and that's about 5 weeks from today. And it's at the Holiday Inn between Everett and Seattle. You can't miss it. It looks just like every other Holiday Inn, you know, green sign. Between Everett and Seattle. You can't miss it. It looks just like every other Holiday Inn, you know, green sign. You know, bring dollars, you know. But if you want any information on this, you either get a hold of me or somebody in the committee. And it's Post Office Box 467, Everett, Washington, 98206. And it's 190 miles from Vancouver right here. And it's 125 miles from Vancouver, B.C. So it's pretty centrally located where everybody can get to it. And the total package will be $1,750, just like this roundup. And we need your support. And that's all I have to say. Thank you.
I want to tell Kelly that putting on the second annual roundup is a snap, you know. Rigorous honesty. It's really been a pleasure for me. Are there any other announcements that anybody would really like to share with us?
My name is Jeff. I'm an alcoholic. During the meeting this afternoon, or before the meeting this afternoon, Bud got up and made an announcement about some financial problems we're having. And I've got to say, the response has been tremendous. We have a lot of money just flat contributed. I think everybody ought to give themselves a hand on that one. It looks like we're getting down pretty close to the break-even point now. We're going to have an exact total at breakfast tomorrow morning. Hopefully we're not going to be doing any hat passing, but we won't know until tomorrow morning. One other thing we'd like to do this evening is pass around a sheet, and anyone who is staying either here or across the river at the other Thunderbird that came in for the conference, we'd like to ask you to sign just your name and your room number under the motel you're staying in. Thank you.
We need the room numbers because for every 50 rooms of you folks who stay here, every 50 rooms that you take up, the hotel has agreed to give us one free room. And we have several that we are using for hospitality rooms and for guest speakers. And the rooms here, for those of you who are staying, know that they're fairly expensive. And we believe that there are quite a few of you that are staying here that maybe the hotel doesn't know you're with. That you're with us. And we can understand you being leery to tell them, but you know, it would really give us a break if you could just kind of let the hotel know or sign the piece of paper that you are, in fact, with our group and staying at their facility. Barring any other announcements, I'd like to get the meeting underway. If you will join me in a moment of silence. I've just been told that there is a rogue roundup in Southern Oregon on May 6th. Now if you'll join me in the serenity prayer. God, grant us the serenity to accept the things we cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. Anonymity, like our sobriety, is a treasured possession. We ask the help of our guests, especially those representing the media, in protecting the anonymity of all alcoholics present or mentioned here this weekend. I'd also like to add that that goes for picture taking. You may be taking a picture of a good friend of yours who you know they don't mind you take their picture. There may be 100 people behind them who don't want their faces on your film. So be awfully careful that if you're going to take a picture, that you make sure the people who are in that picture want it taken. Jeff, would you come up and share with us what the program is?
The following is a definition of Alcoholics Anonymous as it appears in our international publication, The Grapevine. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is the desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy. Neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
I forgot to say that Jeff was from Portland. The person who's going to read the steps, I met a couple months ago, and I was really impressed by her sobriety. And I found out she came from a little town where she's not only the only young person, but she's the only female. She's a token female young person. And she's really got a dynamite program. Maggie from Grants Pass.
I'd also like to say that Nancy called me from Portland to Grants Pass, and it was the first time in many, many years that anybody has ever called me to do anything. And I'm Maggie, and I am an alcoholic. And I'm really grateful to be here tonight. And I wanted to let you guys all know that I love you all. And I couldn't express to you how much love I felt through this conference and meeting so many young people. How it works. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program. Usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. There are such unfortunates. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those, too, who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. At some of these we balked. We thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. Remember that we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, and powerful. Without help, it is too much for us. But there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. Half measures availed us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We asked his protection and care with complete abandon. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery.
Number one, get into a powerful alcohol. Get our life. Two, get to believe the power greater than ourselves to restore sanity.
Heaven, humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings.
Many of us exclaimed, what an order. I can't go through with it. Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear three pertinent ideas. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. And C, that God could and would if he were sought. Beautiful.
Now I'll share with you that this next week is Maggie's, God willing, Maggie's first AA birthday. Why it works, Todd, from Oak Harbor. Do you want to come up and share that with us?
Yep. Hello, I'm Todd, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Todd.
I just want to tell you that I love Alcoholics Anonymous, and I love you people. I really do. The 12 traditions. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. 2. For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3. The only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. 4. Each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. 6. An AA group ought never to endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. AA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees to directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the AA name ought never to be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need to always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. 12. Anonymity is a spiritual foundation of our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you.
What it used to be like, what it happened, what it's like now. No, I'm not going to tell you my story. I can just see you guys paying 7.5 to come in here and hear my story. When I was first getting sober, I really had a hard time going to sleep at night. I understand that's not unusual. And I used to tell my stories. I had been to enough speakers meeting and heard people telling their story, and I thought, gee, that really looks glamorous. So I'd lay in bed, you know, awake at night, and I'd go through my story, which is ironic because I still can't remember most of it. And I want you guys to know that without fail, every time it put me to sleep. So fortunately, we're not going to have a room full of sleeping people, because Sandy B. from Alexandria, Virginia is going to share his story with us.
My name's Sandy Beach. I'm an alcoholic. Hi. God, this is something, I'll tell you. First of all, I want to thank you all for inviting me out here and letting me share all this enthusiasm and excitement that's going on. I come from a little more conservative area of the country, and we laugh every other week at, but we're staying sober, so, you know. I came into AA in 1964, and I haven't been drunk since my first meeting, and I owe it all to not drinking. And I like to get that out. Yay! I just like to get that out of the way in case there's somebody new here and you're wondering what all this sobriety's about, and I really think not drinking has a lot to do with it, at least in my opinion. Hey. And I always assume that there may be someone in your first week or month or so in AA, and a lot of times I get rolling along, I'm talking about the steps or talking about a spiritual awakening or something like that, and you forget to mention this not drinking right off the bat. You know, as you get excited about talking about the program and this and that, and I really believe with when we're new and our brains are a little bit foggy, we might miss that part, and you're coming around and you're not getting any of the benefits of the program, and you keep getting drunk, and if that's happening, I would check your drinking. This is what I'd be going after as possibly the cause of a lot of these problems. I come from the East Coast, up in Connecticut, and was brought up there, very conservative parents, and I think as a youngster I was being taught to be a snob. That was sort of the thrust of my upbringing. My problem as a young kid was I was very nervous and insecure. And it's very difficult to pretend to be a snob when you are nervous and insecure. And you, the reason I mention that is that I really think that gave me a lot of good training in being an alcoholic. Because us alcoholics, as we get into our drinking and all that, really have to pretend to be what we're not, and have to pretend that we're not afraid, and have to pretend that we feel equal to other people. So I had a head start on a lot of people as far as I was concerned, and I always liked in my story to go back to the childhood, because I can't go back any further than that. If I could, I would, but that's where my memory stops. And I, you know, it's funny, my mind is jumping all around because it's 11 o'clock my time, and so you'll have to bear with me, but something during the program here tonight reminded me of when I was in the Nut Ward in 1964, and I'd been locked up there for a long time, and I was sort of reliving my entry in there, and I remember a specific instance, and this was after coming through the DTs and so on down, where I was in this maximum security area, and they had us in beds with sides on them, which is like a crib, and they had the rubber mattresses underneath there, and I remember the first thing I noticed was that someone had wet the bed that I was in. You know, and I was coming to, and was shaking and really hurting. And after a while, we were starting to come around, and the guy in the crib next to me asked me if I wanted a cigarette. And I said, yes. And it was then that he explained that that was good that I smoked, because now he could go to sleep. Because there were no matches allowed back there, and no sharp objects. You guys, some of you have been back in there, you know what I'm talking about. There's no sharp objects, no razor blades and all that. And what the object was to keep one guy awake at all times, keeping the cigarette going. Because otherwise you might wait 3 or 4 hours for a corpsman to come back and give you a light. So there was two of us that could do our number back and forth with a cigarette there. But over in the other corner was a Navy commander, is all by himself in a crib. And when his cigarette would go out, or he'd go to sleep, his cigarette would fall on the floor or in the mattress or something like that. And then when he'd come to, he'd have to wait 2 or 3 hours. And I can remember sitting there couple days later, when my brain cleared up a little bit and I was suffering tremendous pain and all the withdrawal and all that, sitting in my crib looking over at this guy, smoking my cigarette and looking at him waiting for the corpsman to come in, and I said to myself, now there's a guy whose life is unmanageable. There's a guy. If I ever get that bad, I'm going to do something about my drinking and so on down. Now, I don't know why something that happened tonight reminded me of that, but I just wanted to make sure to share it. Just so you know how the old brain works and who you're dealing with up here, it's, I have a lot of problem with priorities and getting things straightened out. Like I was saying, up in New England, a little kid, I don't know where I got all these ideas. I don't know if any of you have ever thought back and wondered where we get all these ideas. They suddenly are in our heads and we're walking around going, people are mean. I mean, did you ever have that idea? Or the world is cruel. And I really believe that this is an essential part of the program. When they talk about old ideas availing us nothing, it's all of them. All of these values and ideas have to go, and or at least be reevaluated and reexamined, or we're going to continue to use the faulty information. And I had a whole bunch of it, and it's, I suppose I was sober a few years before I started really questioning the full impact of all of this bad information. I had a lot of stuff growing up. And somewhere along the line, I got the information that I wasn't as good as the next person, and that really I was sort of a unwanted little kid who was had a lot of problems, and he better not let anybody find out about him. And I don't know where I got that, but I had it. And this was not helped when around 6 or 7, I forget exactly when, I got marched into the Catholic Church. And I always like to share this. If, as a matter of fact, if I had to blame my alcoholism on anything, I would blame it on the Catholic Church, just because they're big and they got a lot of money. What do they care? They really don't care. And besides, I would like them to experience some of the guilt that I experienced all these years. And I give it back to them. And so, so I'll tell you what my memories were of walking in there. I'm trying to give you that little skinny kid. He really faints a lot, you know, that kind of kid. And I'm in there, and they go, "Welcome, little boy. We're here to tell you about God. And you are in trouble." And that's the first thing you ought to learn about this. We're going to tell you all about the world and where you're going after you die, and you're not going to like it. And I just got into this thing, and so what I'm sharing with you is my spiritual foundation that I took through life with me, which was shaky, to say the least. And I figured the best I could hope for out of life was a draw. You know. And I remember somewhere in there, there was a deal that if you could, somewhere in the service, they said, "Hey, we're going to all stop now and say a few prayers for those folks in purgatory." And that place really was my nightmare. I used to think about that a lot, going to sleep at night was purgatory. And I wanted everyone to like me so that when, after I died, when they got to that spot, everybody would think of me. And they'd go, "Get him out of purgatory." That's the thing. So that's why I was pleasing people. And I didn't realize that until about last week. One of our problems in the neighborhood was, and I come from just outside of New Haven, Connecticut, in case you want to stay away from that area. One of the problems I had growing up, there was a lot of impure thoughts in my neighborhood, and they would come into my room occasionally, and those had to be confessed and they were racking up years in purgatory just about all this stuff. When I was 13, I figure I had around 85,000 years to do on stuff I had just thought of doing. I hadn't even done anything yet, and I was just guilty. So now we had a nervous little kid who was pretending to be a snob who was guilty. And I would like to talk about guilt, because if any of you have read that wonderful pamphlet, The Member's Eye View of Alcoholics Anonymous, my favorite pamphlet of all the ones that have been written, that author talks about guilt being the first one of our character defects to arrive, and very often it's the last one to go in our sobriety. It takes years to get rid of that thing. I think it took me about 7 years to finally become officially unguilty and get the stamp off of my forehead. I thought I was born guilty, that I somehow could have spared my mother the pains of childbirth. I mean, that's how self-centered I think I was. And I just, I don't know if the doctors did it or what. They would just go down the line, hey, guilty, that one there. And, oh, another one, guilty. I'd hate to tell you what I thought they made that judgment on, but I'll save that for another... for another talk. But I really felt that was what I had, was this guilt, that sense of guilt, and I used to use very circular logic in figuring out what that guilt was. And I would go through things like, well, that guilt must be caused by all of the things that make me feel guilty. And then I would say, yeah, but I'd like to get rid of this feeling, it's so uncomfortable. And then I would feel guilty about wanting to get rid of the guilt that I had. And I'd go, oh. And then I'd say, now what the problem is, I don't know what God's will is. And the reason I don't know it is because I'm guilty. Otherwise, I would have a clear picture with it. I'm trying to share the number I was doing on myself growing up. I know none of you ever did that. You probably had life figured out like I assumed everybody else did. And that was the thing that was strange about growing up. Whenever you'd ask another kid, how's everything going, he'd say, fine. And I really believed that. I didn't think about the fact that that's what I told other people when they asked me. And I developed the concept that I was the one who was screwed up and everybody else was all right, and God forbid they should ever find out what's wrong inside here, that I was totally confused about life. It had me frightened. Felt, you know, that any day the cat was going to be out of the bag, this kid should be dragged off. And so that was sort of where I was going as I moved on into high school. And, of course, that was very intimidating because there was a lot of people there. People bothered me. And not like eyeballs looking at me. I just knew that somebody was going to sense the truth about this kid, that he was just really uptight all the time and just didn't have quite all the answers, but he was trying to pretend that he did, trying to act real cool, trying to be a natural leader. Turned out I was a natural-born follower rather than a natural-born leader. But I got to thinking about all of the natural-born leaders in the world would be nowhere without us natural-born followers to follow them. So we do serve a very useful purpose. And I like to do my own thing. I can remember that. The strange thing about doing my own thing, though, was that it was just the same as what everybody else was doing. I don't know if any of you got involved in that. When I was growing up, there would be a certain tie style that came in, or a crew cut, or long hair. And it was, I would think of it, and then all the rest of the kids would jump right on the bandwagon the week before I started doing it. So I ended up going to university right in my hometown, and got there, still hadn't had a drink, just felt that marvelous relationship with the world that I just described. And I got there, and boy, there's a lot of smart people there, and all of a sudden you were a small fish in a big pond, and it was kind of devastating. And I had more of this feeling of insecurity, and the world just was quite confusing to me. And I blame it on people like you, because you used to tell me that everything was fine. It was not until I got into AA and went to a bunch of open meetings and I started seeing all kinds of people get up here and they were sharing how screwed up everything was. And I suddenly realized that I had been put on all these years by the various people telling me that everything was all right. And as the years went by in AA, I suddenly came to the conclusion that I would rather be me than anyone else in the world. And this doesn't have anything to do with how good I feel about myself. It's how screwed up I realize all you are. And I've heard all these stories, and I just don't want to trade with anybody. It's not safe if the other guy gets up here. Oh, everything's good in my life. I go, keep it. I'll take my mess. I'm used to the mess. I'm working on it. I'm getting some of this stuff straightened out, so I don't want to trade anymore because you've finally been honest and you're sharing with me that you're having a problem bedwetting still or something like that. And I go, all right, I relate to that. So that's been very helpful, this honesty thing, to find out that other people have had a few of these problems and have gone on a few guilt trips and can't get rid of that self-centeredness and don't understand the relationship with their parents, or if they got kids, they don't understand why they don't like them and they're trying to adjust to that. And hey, everybody's getting honest, it made me feel good that maybe I could start working on my own problems. And that was nice. That was that's part of AA. That was very important. There were a lot of ideas that I had to question. That I was talking about. I'll tell you some of them now in case I forget them. I'll get around to having a drink in a minute. But, which I was just about to do. There was a guy going to walk in and offer me a